is In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle on News Talk 760 WJR, presented by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Now here's Marie Osborne.
Thanks for joining us on In the Mix. I'm Marie Osborne. Rochelle Riley is off this week. This past week, an 11-year-old boy charged with manslaughter after sneaking a handgun out of his dad's closet and shooting a 3-year-old boy. Joining us to talk a little bit about this case that has everybody talking, Todd Flood. He is a local attorney, but also the host of Behind the Bench here on WJR. You'll hear him every first Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Todd, thank you for joining us here.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about this 11-year-old. This raised so many eyebrows. Prosecutor Kim Worthy charging this young boy with manslaughter in this case, in this shooting case. First of all, my first question was, why weren't the parents charged? Why did this child get a hold of a gun? Do you have any insight into that?
Well, I don't know the particular facts as it relates to the parents. It would be that you're raising the right question. The question is, how is the culpability of the parent not under serious scrutiny because they made a gun accessible to an 11-year-old? And then had the ability, the 11-year-old had the ability to sneak off and hide with the gun. Those types of questions raise a lot of suspicions to most people, because it seems so careless that a parent wouldn't be charged with some sort of neglect, allowing this to happen and causing the death.
What about the child at 11 years? I'm a parent. I've had 11-year-olds in my presence.
Right.
I've been responsible for them. They're not thinking clearly at that age in a lot of ways. You still have to remind them about right and wrong. How much does this child know at the age of 11 between right and wrong? I guess that's the big legal question, right?
Well, yeah. I think, I have twins at 11. I think...
Oh.
Children at 11, they know the difference between right and wrong. It's the question of wisdom. Do they, wisdom doesn't just come at you at 11 and all of a sudden you're going to make great decisions, right? So if it was truly an accident, and that's what all of us want to believe, we got to inure to the benefit of Judge Worthy in making this decision, because I promise you this, she's going to scrutinize all the facts and make the assessments. Charging an 11-year-old with a criminal act, manslaughter, would require almost confessing to that this is what I wanted to do.
What do you think is going to happen next in this case? I mean, of course, there's all the judicial process, but is there any way that there could be some kind of plea made in this case? Or
I suspect that that's what's going to happen, because I think ultimately cooler heads are going to prevail, unless you go back to your first question that the parents are just not in the picture. My gut reaction to this case is going to be that there will be a resolution to this case. You may get a Right Start program. It's kind of like a deferral program in Wayne County, or a diversionary type program in Wayne County, where the young man doesn't receive a record but goes through some serious counseling and training. This case will go away. You don't want to change the trajectory of an 11-year-old that they're stuck in a system that they can't get out of, and they're in a spiral out of control. This, because it's caught so much attention, and because there's a lot of great judges and referees. I just was in the Lincoln Hall of Justice not too long ago. Some really smart people. They're going to be equipped to make sure that, I believe anyway, there's a thoughtful resolution to the case that can bring back some wholeness to this child and this family.
Local attorney Todd Flood, also Behind the Bench here on WJR every first Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Todd, thank you for your insight.
Thank you.
In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Sponsored by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Once again, here's Marie Osborne.
Well, the college or university experience can be awfully intimidating for anyone, but if you're the first person in your family to ever experience college or a university, It can be a daunting experience, certainly. The University of Detroit Mercy is doing something about helping those students to embrace college life and to be a success at it. Mary Catherine Harrison joining us here on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. She's an associate professor of English, the director of the Academic Exploration Program at the University of Detroit Mercy. Mary Catherine, thank you so much for joining us here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
You've got a mouthful for a title, I might add, but your mission is pretty simple, isn't it? You want first-generation college students to be successful when they get there.
Absolutely. And as a university, we're really committed to all of our students, of course, but supporting first-gen college students is a really important project for us, and we're excited to be part of it. I'm excited to be part of it.
What makes their experience so unique? What are some of the very first hurdles that first-generation students encounter when they get to the college and university level?
The transition to college can be overwhelming for everybody. It was overwhelming for me. You know, there's so much to figure out in terms of what campus culture is like, how you talk to professors, how you handle financial aid. And first-gen students might not have the same built-in network of college grads that can coach them through that process. So one thing that we try to do as a university is provide that network so that first-gen students can figure out the transition to college and be successful.
And you're heading up a group at the university, first-gen at UDM. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, you know, all over the country, there's been a real move to for first-gen students to really come together and talk about their experience and have community with each other. So student groups like the one we're starting, which is first-gen at UDM, really gives a safe space for first-gen students to get answers to any question they have and to learn from each other, right? Part of it's learning from professors like me or staff members on our campus, but a big part of it is just learning from each other's experience, learning from upperclassmen, and recognizing the power of being a first-gen student.
Has anyone spent time measuring, like in a survey in some kind of scientific or even quasi-scientific way, the success rate of first-generation students at the college level?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of research has been done on different six-year graduation rates, and first-generation college students have a set of challenges often that continuing generation students don't have. So that has an impact on six-year graduation. And one of the reasons for starting groups like FirstGen at UDM and all of the support that our university is giving to first-gen students is to make sure that they can have the same graduation rates and success rates as continuing gen students, because they're just as talented. They're just as motivated. In some ways, they can be much more motivated because they're taking such a big step in their family. So it's really just giving them the resources that they need to be successful.
One of the sentiments that first-generation college students, I would imagine, bring with them is the fact that they, you know, when I went to college, I felt it was just me going to college. But I think that right. With some of these students, it feels like it's not just them. They're bringing their family, their community, certainly if they're the minority community, they're bringing them along, right?
It can be a lot of pressure. It's also a great sense of privilege for many of my students, but it is a lot of pressure to feel like if you're the first in your family or one of the first in your family to start on that college path, you do have a sense of you are bringing your family and your community with you and setting a new model in your family. And that can create some anxiety in students about whether they will make it, whether they will fulfill the expectations of their family. Some first-generation college students experience what's called imposter syndrome, which is that feeling of maybe I don't belong in college or maybe I don't fit in with everybody else here. So that's a big part of getting first-gen students together and recognizing that they absolutely do belong on campus and they're an important part of campus life.
And you pair staff and faculty with these students, right? So they have a lot of one-on-one.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we were just awarded a $1.1 million grant from the Department of Education that's going to allow us to have personalized success coaching, mentoring for all of, it's for first-gen students, for low-income students, students with disabilities. And we already provide a lot of that support for students, but this is going to allow us to expand it, to offer it to even more students. So you've got relationships with staff members in the Student Success Center, relationships with professors in your classes, which is so important for all college students, and then relationships with other students on campus. And together, all of those relationships are what provide that support network for students.
Well, it's an intimidating experience, no matter how you cut it, going to a university, even a college situation. Very intimidating, and certainly you're making it a lot easier for these first-gen students. Mary Catherine Harrison, thank you so much for joining us today here on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle.
Thank you so much for having me.
Up next here on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle, only Marie this week. Rochelle's on vacation. So stay with us as we talk to a chef, a local chef, who's taken his gig west. That's coming up next here on In the Mix.
In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Presented by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health.
Go West Young Man, a popular Detroit-based barbecue chain opening its doors in Grand Rapids. And joining us is the chef, Brian Perrone. Brian, welcome to In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. Rochelle on vacation this week. She's going to be bummed that she wasn't here to talk great barbecue with Brian Perrone.
Well, I can always talk to her another time.
You bet, you bet. So tell us, you know, just a couple of weeks ago here on the show, we did this interview with the folks in Grand Rapids. They were named the third best economy in the country by a national publication. You know, huge kudos for the Grand Rapids area. And you guys are going to be part of all that now in Grand Rapids. You were really one of the forerunners for the resurgence of the restaurant scene here in Detroit and now expanding west. Why did you make that decision?
Well, you know, Grand Rapids has been on our radar for quite a while, but we weren't ready to make a move at all until now. And the opportunity presented itself at the downtown market, so we kind of leapt at it. And we're really happy with the way everything's going. We just opened the doors. We've got a line out the door. So,
wow.
So far, so good.
So it is the downtown market in downtown Grand Rapids, right? Do you have can you give us a street location on that?
Sure. It's 435 Ionia Avenue Southwest. At the corner of Ionia and Logan is where our store is.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the concept, though, of this downtown market. It's a little different than what certainly the Slo's location here on Michigan Avenue and your Slo's location on 2nd in Detroit.
It is, it is. You know, what we're trying to do, actually, is kind of marry the two concepts and have sort of a to-go or a classic barbecue style along with the full are in the huge beer list that we've always been known for.
So let's talk a little bit about the food scene, both in Detroit and in Grand Rapids. You know, I've noticed a lot of barbecue joints opening up, Brian. Are people ever going to get tired of barbecue?
I don't think so. You know, barbecue is a classic American food that, you know, it appeals to everybody, you know, and that's kind of why we chose barbecue in the first place. Everybody likes it, you know, and there's no right way to do barbecue. It's a classic American food.
Now, as I said a few minutes ago, you know, you were the Slo's Barbecue, you and your partners, one of the first ones to actually ignite this food scene in the city of Detroit. You know, lots of people buzzing a few years ago, wow, there's this place in Detroit where, you know, you got to stand in line to get in, and that was just such an oddity at the time. And of course, now there are lots of other locations where that's happening. And does business continue to be good? Does the flame still burn bright for good food in Detroit?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, we're of the mindset that the larger the pie, the bigger the slice. And it, you know, it's great to have a lot of different options available now. And there's some really, really high quality food available at these new restaurants. So,
but you know, the expansion part is not something that everybody can do. Why have you expanded to Grand Rapids? And you're also going to be opening in Pontiac, right, by the end of the year?
Well, I'm not sure on the timeline on the Pontiac location, but we are going to be opening there for sure.
So, I mean, there's that's got to be, you know, a difficult moment when you decide, okay, we're actually going to do that. Tell us about
right.
that.
Well, you know, I mean, we've been in Detroit now for 10 years. We're in our 10th year right now. So the actual anniversary is on the 16th of September.
Wow.
So, you know, we felt that we were ready for some growth. The way that we were approached about Grand Rapids, the downtown market has just been fantastic, you know, and it's such a great location. And they're doing such good stuff here. We're happy to be a part of that.
10 years. Did you ever think 10 years ago that you'd be standing here today?
You know, I never expected the phenomenon that Slows became. And, you know, I worked really hard, and everybody else that works with us has worked very hard. It's really mind-blowing. It's hard to really get the perspective.
Growing pains, but it sounds like you're dealing with them well. Brian Perrone, a chef at Slow's Barbecue, of course, in Detroit, two locations, and now in Grand Rapids at the Downtown Market. I have it on good authority that is one great place at Downtown Market. Lots of interesting things there, along with Slow's Barbecue. So it's certainly a place a lot of people can check out.
It is. It's a destination for sure.
Brian, thanks for joining us here on In the Mix.
Thank you so much, Maria. It's great to talk to you.
Coming up next here on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle, a charming article about a cashmere scarf by a local newscaster here in Detroit, traveling to India to bring back a special gift for his wife, but it ended up meaning so much more. That's coming up next here on In the Mix.
The Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Sponsored by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Here's Marie Osborne.
We talk a lot about traveling on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. And once again, Rochelle is off this week. So flying solo here, if you will, for In the Mix this week. Traveling, we talk a lot about it on the show, but there's a unique aspect of traveling if you yourself have a background in a particular culture or in a particular country. Roop Raj is a news anchor and a reporter for WJBK Fox 2 here in Detroit, and Roop is joining us on the line. Hello, Roop.
Hey there, Marie. Good to be with you today.
I'm really glad you could join us. You have an article published in an online publication, The Think Club is the online publication, by the way, Travelogue, The Cashmere Scarf, and you wrote an article for this publication, and I thought it was really delightful when I read it. And you talk about your travels in India, and you, like me, are first generation, you're first generation Indian, I'm first generation Italian, and you and I have talked before about how that gives us such a unique perspective, because I don't know about you, but sometimes it feels like I have one foot in one culture and one foot in another culture. Do you feel that way as well?
I always have felt that way. And I think that, you know, at first I would look at that as a disadvantage, because I felt uneasy sometimes when, you know, talking to my American friends, so to speak, out in Troy growing up about what it was like to have Indian relatives or to travel to India or to have a different language spoken at home. And you kind of felt like maybe they looked at you like you were different, and they were mm-hmm. right, you are. But those differences are actually quite special and quite awesome.
And and an advantage. But I like you, when I was growing up, it was, you know, it was not in a day when cultures were celebrated at all. I grew up in a multicultural neighborhood. There were a lot of Ukrainians, a lot of Germans, people speaking their native languages at home, as we did at home. But it was still, you know, in high school, that was just considered weird in a lot of ways. And it took a long time before I realized that it was really a wonderful perspective and a great way to look at the world. And now you wrote about traveling back to India recently and this journey you went on to buy a scarf for your wife. So I want you to walk through that whole process with our listeners. Tell us when you went back to India and just a little bit about the experience there. I understand you still have family there.
I do. In fact, I went back there for a wedding, and it was my cousin's wedding. I was born and brought up in America, grew up in Troy, had been to India two other times, but I was a kid, and this was the first time going back really as an adult. And when I went back, I was just, it is a life-changing experience to go back not only to a different country and see how people live and think differently than you do, but it also is life-changing on a different level. It's when you know that your dad and mom came from this place, And that's a pretty special connection. I think, Murray, you probably would agree, when you go back to the native place where your mom and dad, I mean, where they got married, the house they got married out of, where my dad grew up, all of that stuff, to go see that before the wedding was incredible. But, Marie, what happened was I went to go buy a cashmere scarf for my wife, because cashmere actually comes from the word Kashmir, which is a place in India. And that's where cashmere comes from. It's a Kashmir scarf. So I went to go get one of these cashmere scarves. My wife is not Indian, and she finds a lot of that stuff to be beautiful, as so many people do. In the process of going through to go get it, I ran into the most dense area of poverty you could ever imagine, but where I felt the highest vibration level of happiness. People seem to be so darn content and happy in having almost nothing. They're living and working out of the same shacks that are built out of bamboo sticks and scraps, but they keep their area clean and they take pride in it, and they want you to come visit and buy stuff from them. I don't know if you've seen this in Italy as well, but it's a pretty remarkable scene when you walk by some of these shanty little shops, and they have these huge smiles on their face, and they're real.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So this adventure took you into this area in India. What city was this in?
So this is in a suburb of New Delhi called Gurgaon. And so it's like heading into, I would like to say, like, if you're talking about Detroit being like New Delhi, it would be like heading into Hamtramck.
Okay, like a little enclave.
It's a little enclave, but it's very developed, and I was shocked because, as I told you, those shanty little shops, just in the shadow of that, there's these huge skyscrapers and these buildings for these corporations, and then these boardwalks and fancy restaurants and fancy eateries and donut shops and coffee shops and wine shops. And then you just go like a block down the road and you look, and there's this little scarf shop. So I walked in to go buy a scarf, and I walked in, and it was interesting because the guy there was bent on satisfying this tourist needs. He was like, what colors do your wife like? It was a sea of just cashmere sitting in the middle of his table. He kept throwing them out in front of me, red, purple, green, all the different shapes, sizes, and patterns. And he could tell I didn't like what I saw. And so he instantly tells me, let's go across the street. And so I'm thinking he's taking me to a place that maybe is his, you know, one of his friends or relatives, another shop that he owns. Marie, he was heading to his direct competitor's shop, because he drug me in there and he said in Hindi, which is the native language in India, he said to the other guy, hey man, this guy's from America. He wants to buy a scarf for his wife. He doesn't like the one in my shop. Would you mind treating him to some stuff from your shop? And he looked at me and said, I think you're going to be happier here. I said, is this your brother? Is this your friend? He says, no, this is my competitor. But what good am I if you walk out of this country without the scarf that you wanted and you're not happy? To me, it was almost this karmic sense, like, do the right thing, even if it means handing your business over to somebody else, and somehow it'll come back.
What a great story. Did you find the scarf?
We did. I found the scarf. My wife likes it. Thank God.
I was just going to say, that was my next question. Does she like it? I'll take it if she doesn't. Sight unseen.
Exactly. But you know, what's funny, Marie? You know, when you go to like the Ann Arbor Art Fair, you go to some of these other street fairs, Rochester and Ann Arbor. We have so many great ones. You know, someone will go to India and buy up like 15 different things there. And they'll put them up for the price that rightfully so, when you ship that stuff, it's expensive. But it's just funny to me that stuff is so marked up. When you go there, one of our dollars is 40 of theirs.
Right.
So you can get a really good bargain on, like, cool stuff. But more than anything, the biggest bargain I got was, going on this trip to go see my cousin get married, and in the process learn about how people think differently. And the great thing about America is we bring those cultures here. And back to your original point, Marie, when we see people who are different than us, rather than just saying, well, that's un-American or not American, rather than thinking that way, it's such a beautiful thing to be able to say, actually, that is so American. Ukrainian-American, Italian-American, Indian-American, all of that woven together in this, scarf, together in a quilt, and we're all in it. And I know that's cliche, but honestly, Marie, if you look at what the beauty of this country is built on, it is the differences that make it so special, and some of them can be really colorful.
Right, and I also think, Roop, in our business, it gives us a special perspective on the news, certainly on immigration issues and things like that. We just have a different viewpoint or a different perspective on that, having live that way, live through that with our own parents. So let me ask you this. How you said you did, this has been the first time back for this wedding that you're traveled back there. I'm assuming you're going to travel back there again after having had this. You talk about in this article, again, in the Think Club article, an online publication, you just talked about how rich this trip was and how much of an exchange you had with your family. Do you plan other trips back?
I definitely do. I think I want to take my wife, Julie, there as well, and she definitely wants to as well. You know, every single day that we would FaceTime at the odd hours, because they're 10 and a half hours ahead of us, I would FaceTime at the end of the day, and it was morning in America, and she would just listen to these stories. She's compelled to come with me. And the thing is, it's not just, you know, like her people originally are from Germany and Italy. You know, I think taking these trips to places where all of us are originally from, whether or not our parents came from there or not, it tells a story about who we are in a way that you can't really discover unless you show up there. And then you notice the qualities that people have and you go, wait a minute, that's something that I picked up on. That's kind of how I am. And whether you're German, Italian, Ukrainian, Indian, whatever the culture be, it's so special to go back to a place and say, man, this is where it all started.
Once again, the name of the article is called The Kashmir Scarf by Roop Raj. And he, of course, the news anchor and reporter at Fox 2 here in Detroit. Roop, thank you so much for just a delightful little slice of life. We hope to see you on TV soon.
Well, Marie, I just want to say congratulations on your new venture here at WJR. It's incredible to hear your voice again. And I think I speak for all of Detroit when we say you're such a wonderful voice for all of us to have in our cars and in our living rooms. So thank you for coming back.
You're too kind, Roop. Thank you so much. We're going to talk soon because I know we have an event coming up in September. So we'll be talking again soon.
See you then, my friend.
From the Motor City to Radio City. Coming up next here on In the Mix, a great local choir is making it big on a national stage. That's ahead.
I got a question for you. What does this city know about luxury? Huh? What does a town that's been to hell and back know about the finer things in life? Well, I'll tell you. You see, it's the hottest fires that make the hardest steel. Add hard work and conviction, and the know-how that runs generations deep in every last one of us. That's who we are. That's our story.
Motor City. This is what we do.
All right, so that fantastic music you're listening to can only be one group, Selected of God Choir. Larry Callahan, the director of this uniquely Detroit choir, joining us here today on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Larry, thank you so much for taking, some time out of your very busy schedule. I mean, you're now national stars. What can we say about you guys on America's Got Talent? Well, you're very welcome. It's absolutely our pleasure. You have made it through the second round of America's Got Talent. You are now going to go on to the live performances that start this week, on the show. You know, I have to tell you as a viewer, I could not have been prouder to be born in Detroit and raised in Detroit and seeing that choir up there. What a way to represent the city of Detroit. Awesome work.
Well, we're so excited to be representing the city of Detroit and the revival of the city of Detroit, that the city is coming back, you know, letting the city know that we won't die. We have dreams, too, as well, that will come alive.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk to you about gospel choir and all that other stuff, but you guys are not strangers to the national stage. You've had some other hits with greatness as well. You were in that really fantastic Chrysler commercial a couple of years ago with Eminem.
Yes.
So you had a little brush with greatness there, but do you feel like this is going to be really your moment here, thanks to AGT?
I really feel that this is our moment and our season now. This is, like you said, we've had, you know, a brush with greatness and a national platform, but to be in over 17 million homes every week, it's just overwhelming. And to hear the response from the viewers and the emails and the tweets and the Instagram posts, it's just overwhelming and phenomenal. It's just my heart is so glad, and I'm so glad I'm a part of and from Detroit.
Right. You know, after that first performance that you had, I watched that, and I just got the impression you guys were surprised by the reaction of the audience. Were you really?
As I was directing, you know, I seen my choir eyes, you know, light up. I'm like, what's going on? Because I couldn't see what was going on behind me. And I seen one of the ladies, they started crying. I was like, okay, what's really going on behind me? Is something bad happening? And when I turned around, the whole audience was standing. Also, the four judges. Now, we know that Howard Stern doesn't stand up for anyone. And to see him set up with all four judges was like, that's why I was like, oh my God, I was so overwhelmed. It was a shock.
I was the first person to stand up because I was waiting for something extraordinary, something superior, something perfected to hit our stage. You are superior, you're perfect, you're extraordinary performers. Thank you. And I imagine this means a lot to you, this moment right now, doesn't it?
Yes, sir, it does. Yes, sir, it does.
What does it mean to you?
Watching this show all the time and to actually be on the stage, it's amazing just to express our music like how we do.
Now, one of the keys, though, that I understand to winning this particular competition is that you've got to bring, well, first of all, you've got to bring your A game every time. And then second of all, you have to step it up every time. So you had this awesome debut, fantastic. You came back again. You did a great second performance. Again, I think you got a standing ovation that time.
Yes.
So now you're going on to live performances. Now, what kind of rabbit are you going to pull out of the hat this time?
Well, I'm always trying to think of how I'm going to trump the last performance. And so I got a little secret that I want to let out, you know, on a live show to America. And I think you guys are going to be very, very, very surprised that I went this way.
Oh, really? Okay. Now, we want to remind everybody those live performances are coming up this week. You told me again on NBC, 8 o'clock Tuesday and Wednesday, so we can all tune in. And, of course, you guys are on Twitter, I assume, and on Facebook.
Right. Every social media, Selected of God.
All right. Selected of God Choir from Detroit. So tell me a little bit about the choir itself. How many members are there? Where did they come from? How did you guys all get together?
Well, I have the choir consists of 28 singers, a four-piece band. I took 17 on America's Got Talent. We come from the metropolitan area of Detroit. We have, they are hairstylists, they're doctors, they are homemakers, they're teachers, they're pastors, they are unemployed. That's called them martyrs.
Now, you said there's 28 members, but there's only 17 on stage. Is that what you said?
Yep, 17 on stage, yep.
And do they vary, or are those the 17 you selected to go on stage?
Well, those are the 17 that I selected at the time because, you know, first on their jobs. And so they're also the one that were able to go at the time.
So it's like it sounds like a baseball team, actually, right?
Right.
It sounds a little, as much as I know about baseball, let's not go there. But so let's talk a little bit about gospel music, and in particular, Detroit gospel music. I had a friend visit from overseas a few years ago, and one of the first things she said to me was, oh, you know, Detroit's known for gospel music. Can you imagine that it's our music that is made this this impression to European audiences. Tell us about gospel music Detroit style.
Gospel music from Detroit has such a rich and rich heritage. We have come from Aretha Franklin, from the great James Cleveland. You know, everyone has tried to pattern themselves after Detroit gospel artists, because we have a rich heritage. And they say sometimes, is it in your water? Because everything that comes out of Detroit is a hit, whether it's gospel, whether it's secular, whether it's R&B, jazz, rock and roll, everything comes out of Detroit is a hit. So we have a rich heritage, not only just gospel music, but just music, period, here.
Of course, the heritage of Motown and all of that. I have to tell you, the singers that you have in your group have such incredible voices alone. They could stand alone as performers. How do you get those people to just kind of be this cohesive group?
Well, we do a lot of rehearsing. Even before AGT, I rehearse once a month, 12 hours.
You rehearse, I'm sorry, tell me again, once a month?
Once a month for 12 hours.
Wow.
We do break for an hour for lunch.
Wow. Sounds a little tough there, Larry.
Well, you know, in order to be great, you have to be sharp at your craft. So we practice. I tell everyone to lay on the floor on their back, and we sing a good 4 hours on our back just to you know, do training for our diaphragm and
right.
Just different vocal exercises. So they put in a lot of hard work.
Wow, no kidding. Larry, I got to ask you about your wife.
I'm Larry Callahan.
And I'm Teresa Callahan. Get it together. And we're Larry Callahan and Selected of God.
From Detroit, Michigan. Child, it's gonna get easy. Like I was in the choir, you know. My wife, Teresa, she is the best thing that ever happened to me.
We were high school
best friends. And we still love each other like the first day. I'm thinking about myself. What about you? You still love me?
No, I still love you? Yeah, I love you. If you win this $1 million, I'm sticking around.
Okay, yeah.
No.
Well, you guys, if this choir thing doesn't work out, I think the two of you could take that comedy act on the road.
I will say, you'll get it first. There's something in the making, so.
Oh, great. Great. I can't wait to hear about it. Well, maybe you two are going to get your own show. I would hope so.
I don't know.
Oh, I might have hit something there. Larry Callahan, I want to thank you so much for being on In the Mix with
Thank you so much, Rochelle.
I'm sorry Rochelle wasn't here this week. She's going to be totally bummed she didn't talk to you about this fantastic.
Oh, I said hi.
Yeah, but you know what? I have a feeling we're going to have you back on. I just feel it that you guys are going to go a long way in this competition. I really do. And how great for you to bring gospel music to the entire country, Detroit style.
Thank you so much.
What a way to close the show this week on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Next week, Rochelle will be back here on In the Mix, and we hope you can join us then. Stay well.